Hello and welcome to a late night movies you should see, which I always feel like recording in a really gruff, slow voice, even though you aren't listening to this at 11 o'clock at night. It's not for you, but there you go. Well, anyway, today we're doing the Christopher Guest directed and Christopher Guest written. I was actually going to end up with written.
Yeah.
That was what was coming out, and I had to stop it on the way. Written by Christopher Guest and Eugene Levy, the 2000 film Best in Show. And we have a wonderful panel of people lined up to discuss this dog-related film this evening. Alison Downing's here. Hello, Alison Downing.
Hello, Richard Smith.
And we have Simon Applin, who's been working ever so hard to get here and fought through my stupidity to do so. So well done, and thank you for turning up, Simon.
It's nice to be here. Hi, everybody.
Hi. And Scott's here.
It's only 6 p.m. for me, so it's not that late.
That's fine. Good. And Jonathan Wilkinson is here also.
Yeah, it's 11 o'clock here.
Yeah.
As already discussed, because I'm on this side of the Atlantic.
Is that right?
Not that far from you guys, actually.
No, not that far at all.
I'm a little further.
Just a little. Just a little.
But at least on this side of the Atlantic.
In context.
In context. You know, an American will probably call around and ask for a coffee. You know? It seems to be that way. You know, the listeners and presenters that we've met from across the Atlantic will travel hundreds of miles to just say hi to someone. And we don't really do that. We do it if we're on the way to somewhere else.
This is the first time I've ever clubbed together with people based on time zone. Just a pick on him. Look at you over there in your Eastern Standard Time. Ah.
Yeah, it's only dinner time for you.
Yeah. Anyway, Best in Show. Alison, give me a brief summary of your thoughts on this film.
I think that it's a wonderful, gentle comedy that just has a smile plastered on your face from pretty much the first scene to the end of the film. All of it's joyful. And every person that you see, that you meet along the way, that owns a dog, we meet the dogs and the owners, their particular foibles. Every person that you meet, you're like, ah, that person, I like that person. They've been in loads of things, they're funny. And it just goes on like that until you've got the entire cast. I adore it. I love dogs. I love poking fun at dog owners and kind of trying to see who I am in that whole spectrum of idiocy that surrounds dog shows.
We're the couple with the depressed dog.
No, we're not. We're really not. We're really not. I don't know. It's quite grim. I suspect we're the gay couple.
Which one?
Well, that's it. Yeah, the male gay couple.
I thought you were going to say, well, which one would I be? And I thought, well, the one with the fabulous dress sense.
Actually, you know who it is? It's Harlan Pepper, if I'm perfectly honest. I am Harlan Pepper. I adore him. As soon as I see his face, I just start giggling because I know he's going to get in the van and sing a little song that's going to make me howl.
But let's
move
on.
The way he loves his dog is the way that I love my dog. Anyway, go on.
Let's move on. Scott, what are you thinking about this film then?
I know I'm going to be catching a lot of heat throughout this entire episode because I'm probably going to be the one who enjoyed it the least of all of us. Now, this is not to say that I didn't like it. It was cute, but I've never been a dog person.
Oh, see, there's the rub I feel.
And I knew that was going to be an issue, and I was correct. The entire time, I kept thinking, okay, is this a comedy, or is this actually how people are? Because I would not put it past the serious, serious dog people to be like the characters that we're seeing in the film. But aside from that, though, to just look at it from the perspective of it being a Christopher Guest film along the lines of A Mighty Wind, Waiting for Guffman, and to a degree, this is Spinal Tap, even though Christopher Guest was just a performer and it wasn't actually his film. It started this style, I think, for him. And at this point, I think I would take any of those three over this film, only because the style of the comedy and the subject matter I can get into a lot more, be it the the two different musical styles, or especially in Waiting for Guffman. I was in community theater for like a decade and a half. I was always doing some type of theater, so everything in that film I could relate to. In this one, not so much. So while I thought it was funny and it was well made, it didn't speak to me the way I'm sure it speaks to most people who consider it to be the best of the Christopher Guest films.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion. That's very true. So let's move on. And
as the mouse hovers over the drop from call button.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you know what it is? It's because you've recently moved and I've not had time to have the remote destruct mechanism put in your new place. All Simply Syndicated presenters have one. They don't all know, but they're there. So, Simon, what do you think about Best in Show?
Well, I'm not a dog person either. I'm very much not a dog person. I try and spend as little time around dogs as possible. But I love the film. It's fantastic. I don't see that looking at these people and not knowing if, you know, they are representative of real dog show owners or not is a problem. Just like looking at This Is Spinal Tap and thinking there are musicians who are very like this. This is quite true to life in a lot of places. It's not a problem in that film either.
Sorry to interrupt. I think we should put this to bed at the beginning of the show. I want to make it very clear that there absolutely are people exactly like you're going to see with their dogs on this film. Don't be cagey with it. Yeah, there are some mentals out there. We may have approached that line ourselves from time to time, as I'm sure every dog owner has at some point. But there are people.
I don't think that being true makes this film less funny.
No, not at all.
It makes it much, much funnier.
Absolutely.
Yes, we see ourselves. We see ourselves.
But yeah, I just wanted, because everybody kind of mentioned that. But no, this is real.
And we see people that we meet on the moor when you're taking the dog out. We've met people who've been helping their dog try on tiny top hats in Alameda in California. So we've been around the more extreme dog owners, the ones who almost put more care and attention into their dogs than themselves. We're not those kinds of people, but there was a scene in there that was so me, it was just disturbing to see.
Anyway, carry on, Simon. I'm sorry, totally derailed you there, but...
Oh, no, there's no problem. I was pretty much done. I love the film. I think it's very honest about dog ownership, especially at that sort of show dog level. And it's full of really beautiful subtlety, as well as there's a lot of overt humor there, but there's so many little background touches and subtle details that there's just always something to keep on the lookout for. I loved this film. It was totally engaging.
Okay, and finally, Jonathan.
I really enjoyed this film. Like Alison said, it's nice, it's light, it's quaint, and it just got better as it went up. And then the commentator showed up, and I lost it.
It's so
by
funny.
Far my favourite character in the so entire funny. Film.
He does kind
the pair of...
of
them are brilliant.
Yeah.
I think it was the absolute best decision, reading up on the film, that Chris Guest made in making this film, was to tell one of the commentators, the sort of flashy colour commentator, to do no research whatsoever and give him no dialogue in the script to prepare him and just leave him to stumble for words throughout the entire film whilst the other guy was given reams and reams of research material.
I just love the fact that he just kept referencing back to sports that he obviously knew about everything. Yeah. This is the bottom of the... So is this like the bottom of the ninth? It just reminded me of like the Winter Olympics when the BBC threw in a bunch of like Summer Olympic commentators to do sport. It's like, yeah. Here you go, have a go, curling.
Yeah, you must know loads about it. They do sport.
Oh, it's curling though. Come on. I would have trouble saying enough words. Well, he's going to try and throw this stone as close as he can to the next stone. He's doing it now. And he's thrown it.
And they're brushing. And they're brushing.
That's my winter sports commentary. Or the more exciting sports. Oh, shit, that's fast. Can you imagine? Have you seen? Can you imagine going down like that fast in a biscuit tin lid? Oh, my God. They get down and they're not even dying. I
or
tell
the skiing
ya.
Where you're just yeah. silent for about two-thirds of the run and they're just, oh, that's going to hurt. Oh.
See, that's why I don't ski. That's why.
I would work in as many references to Cool Runnings as I possibly could.
That's yeah. the other one. See, the BBC next Winter Olympics, I'll go. And that'll save you so much money. Imagine that. You just have to pay me and I'll do the Winter Olympics. Be great. I heard, and this is what I've heard listening to Pendulette's podcast, is that he says Fred Willard was a stand-up comedian in the 70s, I think, and he came up with this character that we know as Fred Willard, but he just became this character. Like, he woke up one day and he was this guy, and he's this guy at home or on stage. There is no difference between his on-screen or on-stage persona to his real-life person.
Ooh.
And it freaks him the hell out, I think. it's like a really weird thing. He is in character 24 hours a day. And it's weird because he does essentially play the same character on everything you've ever seen him in.
Mm-hmm.
But he's hilarious. And I would agree. I think the commentary bit is probably the best bit of what is a good collection of wonderful things.
And, you know, that particular portion of the film was filmed in a day and a half.
Oh, they really rinsed it out, didn't they? I think they just had such a laugh. I'd love to see the whole reel of what they did. Because, it was unscripted. They got gems out and put them in the film. I'd like to see what else was in there that didn't make the cut. Because I bet loads of it's just hilarious.
I don't know about Best in Show, but going back to Waiting for Guffman, if what I've read is accurate, the 90 minutes of footage that they put together to make Waiting for Guffman came from, I want to say, approximately 24 full hours of footage that they had filmed.
Right.
And they cut 24 hours down to 1.5 to make that movie. And Fred Willard was in that film as well. I've always been interested to see what he was coming up with besides what we saw.
There must have been hours of it. That's all I can imagine.
You just
point a camera at people and say, go. And there are lots of scenes like that.
Yeah, there's lots of scenes which just kind of end as well. And then just move on and you think, there must have been a bit more to that scene. But they obviously thought it wasn't worthy of the film.
I also think it's part of the style that they've used Christopher Guest used it in other films as well. This kind of mix of interviews to camera and like fake cinema verite, like reality TV, where we just follow people as they get ready to go to the dog show and say their goodbyes and pack and things like that. So it just feels like it's okay to cut in those situations when you've got two styles that you're putting together. It feels like a reality TV show that you're watching.
I could see Channel 4 making this as a real thing.
It would work. It would work.
I think they have.
I was going to say, I'd be surprised if they haven't actually already.
I was going to say they probably could film a documentary about Crufts and it wouldn't be too far from this, which is probably why it's that funny.
They do show it as well, Channel 4, don't they? They show Crufts in the UK.
Well, they do now because the BBC dumped them.
Mm. Well, yeah, because of the scandal of the pedigree dog inbreeding.
Yeah. What was I going to say? You throw me with your inbreeding dogs.
Sorry.
Not your fault. I'd already started thinking about it.
I'm sorry to get politically correct, but to state right from the bat, I'm politically opposed to dog shows that celebrate the pureness of breed, because the more you purify a breed, the more you breed in difficulties that make dogs sick and poorly and don't live very long lives and don't live very happy lives. I don't like the whole culture of the dog show, really. It's a great joy to poke fun at it.
I'm slightly curious to how far we would get / how much of a catastrophe it would be if we were to enter Barclay into the other dog
Scruffs.
Show. Yeah.
Scruffs.
With, and I stress this is most important, absolutely no preparation whatsoever.
Yeah.
We just go one day. I'm curious. I don't think it'd be catastrophic. He would at worst not do anything.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what would happen.
It would be me sitting in the middle of that thing. Come on then. Come on. No. No. It's great. I don't think, but I think with Best in Show, you kind of don't have to be a dog person.
Oh God, no. I'm sitting here as not a dog person.
And it's just such a wonderful thing. In the same way that I don't think you don't have to like rock music to get on with Spinal Tap. So in that sense, it's pretty good. What else do we have?
Well, what else? Filmed and presented as sort of windows into the world. So you definitely don't need to be an insider already to get the joke, because they are sitting there setting up the joke, telling you this is the world that you're looking at. So yeah, it's a complete outsider's point of view, like a documentary. So it works from any level, whether you're already on the inside, in which case it's your loving parody of something you already hold dear, or if you know nothing about this stuff, and it's just this bizarre world that is being painted in front of you that can't possibly be real, but feels very authentic.
Very much so, and the dogs really—they're not the stars. The owners are the stars. The dogs are there as comic foils. They're like silent partners in the comic scene who just are in the middle of the madness.
I kind of felt
silent.
Sorry for the dogs on a couple of occasions.
Yeah,
when they don't. The bit
the
where
Weimaraner,
the guy, yeah.
It's like, leave poor
so
dog.
The shouting at the dog, or to the dog, really.
And we know about energy, right? Because we've done our Caesar homework, Richard, yeah. And we don't have that energy around him.
So the dog's just like, what's the problem?
Don't be losing it around the dog.
To bring it back to Penn Jillette, the dogs are the tellers to all the performers.
Exactly.
Penn Jillette's.
Exactly. And, films like The Artist use the dog to overt comic effect. The dog is there to be uber sweet, to get his own jokes, to get his own sympathy from the audience. There's none of that here. The dogs are just passive observers and sufferers of their owners. And I think, the dogs that were really quite well behaved, there are epic tales of bad behavior at dog shows and various bodily fluids and solids and noises and all that kind of thing. And I think they were very lucky in filming this, that all of the dogs were so well behaved.
I'm reading here there was one unscripted bark in the entire film.
That's pretty good.
And it was off screen.
That's pretty good because, the scene where they're really, the one scene where they're really shouting by the Weimaraner, that's not accurate at all. You can see the dog's like, will you just calm down?
Yeah.
It's got a real edge on its face that really contributes to the whole scene of discomfort with his owner.
But they're acting dogs, though. The fictional things that dog hasn't really seen scare any person, really.
They were all champions, actually. I think
were they?
With maybe one exception. But yeah, they were all champion dogs. They were, their Best in Show winners.
They were beautiful dogs. I mean, there's a couple there where you're like, oh yeah, I'd have that one. I'd have Hubert the Bloodhound any day of the week.
It strikes me as such an odd thing to enter into. And I'm sorry, this is kind of not about the film, but I suppose you can't discuss it without briefly touching on dog shows. You've achieved nothing.
You haven't done good grooming. You've done good training. They can walk, they can stop, they can sit, they can turn. They've got to behave around people.
It's just that somebody once wrote down a set of specifications as to what a particular type of dog should be like, and by absolute random chance, you happen to have a dog that closely fits that set of specifications. That's like the lottery, isn't it? You've achieved nothing. You've done nothing.
Well, a lot of breeders breed for those qualities, which is what Alison was talking about earlier. That is the dark side of the dog show. There are a lot of breeders who will breed for those selective qualities.
Oh, of course. I'm talking mainly to the people who enter their dogs. And their sort of celebration.
People invented their dogs.
What have I done? You've done nothing.
They entered the culture when they bought the dog. A lot of people, you know, because it is a whole culture that comes along that you decide to do when you know you've got a perfect dog. And it strikes me that you choose the perfect dog as far as you can when it's a puppy. And you do that by getting a pedigree dog. Now, I've had a pedigree dog that came with a ridiculous 7-word name. We call him Ben. It was far easier. He was called like Lord Silver Blue Lost in the Mist Sunshine, whatever. It was bullshit.
Hippie he had a dog huge readers. Name.
Just a ridiculous dog name that had never been heard before, basically, and that's quite tricky, apparently. And he was a poor, you know, he didn't have an easy life at all. He had quite a few bitts wrong with him. We've got a mutt here who's perfect in every way, who wouldn't win a sausage. But
much to his disappointment.
Yeah, because that's all he's entered
he
for, actually.
He's staring
all
at it
really
until
bothered
he was
about.
Just
you know,
given
do you want
it.
A ward or do you want a sausage? I have a sausage. Oh.
Do you win money?
yeah.
Then I kind of, if it's like free money because you've got a dog that fits, fair enough. But other than that, don't be proud of it. I'm disgraced at you. Whoever you are that I'm apparently talking to.
I think we should briefly discuss the types of people that we meet anyway and what dog they've got.
I met a woman on the moor who said she was a dog psychologist.
Right.
like a therapist.
Yeah.
That different from a trainer?
Not really.
No, yeah, yeah, right.
Well, I don't know. Talk to Boz about this.
Right, because a dog trainer trains a dog. Like walkies and sit and stay there and don't eat that sausage and other things like that. Mm. A dog psychologist... Ask the dog how it's feeling today.
It kind puts of the dog on a couch and then say, tell me about your mother.
It is more like the Caesar approach of trying to find what's bothering the dog and
no,
how to address
it,
all
it's
that.
It's more like the human therapist mentalist method.
Then that's a crazy person.
That's
who's
what
not
I'm
not
saying.
Really doing it right. Talk to Boz about what they really do. Okay.
For me, it's in the realm of that's not a real thing. You've just convinced other people that you're doing something.
It's more
something.
Of a behavioural psychology that is popular.
I'm obviously in the wrong line of work. All I need to do is convince someone that I'm right. And how does that go? Oh, well, this is the problem with your dog. Prove that I'm wrong.
But there are
you
people.
Can't.
There are people out there who are so gullible and will pay so much for their dog to have everything. And we meet these people in this film. You know,
well, I'm more fun than the psychiatrist for dogs or the psychologist for dogs. I just want to briefly mention there is another podcast called Oh No, Ross and Carrie. And they go and do skeptic investigations of things. And they did an episode on a pet psychic.
Yeah.
who was doing cold readings on dogs.
Cold
that episode is
dogs.
So worth going and listening to.
Wonderful.
Game images of food. Walkies.
Yeah.
The trick was, she said she could do it from a photo of the dog. So Ross, who doesn't have a dog, took a photo of someone else's dog and just didn't mention it wasn't his to see what she would say.
Wonderful.
I will say this for the dog psychologist. While she was telling me all this, one of our dogs was swimming in a muddy puddle and it wasn't mine. So... You can talk about dog behaviour all you like.
So we've got this couple in here who have a Weimarana, and somehow that breed helps to describe the couple. You know, very sleek, efficient but neurotic and grey. This couple are grey. They buy everything from catalogues. They love LL Bean. Is it LL Bean or am I getting confused with L Bean and LL Cool J? I never know. But you
none
know,
of these
the
words
Bean.
Mean anything to me.
And you know, they met in opposite Starbucks, the opposite side of the street. What a wonderful thing, you know. They're just the dullest couple ever. And they're having therapy with the dog because the dog's depressed because she's watched them have sex and it's just upset her.
Weird sex.
Yeah. Out of a book kind of sex. The Congress of the Cow.
I actually thought it did, once she described it, it didn't actually sound particularly weird.
Not really. Sounded like Static Wheelbarrow.
I'd have maybe gone for the doggy style joke that was there.
Yeah, I was expecting.
I think they were deliberately avoiding it.
Yeah, that's why, you know, that's why I don't write films and Christopher Guest does.
Congress of the Cow is so, is
that is funnier.
So much funnier. It's got the double C effect of the comic. You see, you've
and
got
the
to
mentioning
have
of the cow.
Cow.
Yeah. That's what it is. Like you're being the
like
cow.
She's the cow.
Yeah, yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you.
And they're just a dross, dinky couple. You know, they've got lots of money and stress about the tiniest things concerning their dog without ever questioning their behaviour and whether that's affecting the dog. To spectacular effect. The bit that I was talking about, what I recognised in myself was the trauma not being able to find the bee.
Yeah, that was what
busy
I was.
Bee.
That was the bit that I was thinking of when I said that.
Can't find the bee. It was in the crate.
Any toy will do. He doesn't
no,
know.
It's not.
He doesn't
not
know
any toy
that Tigger
will do.
Is friends
he needs
with Winnie the
fucking
Pooh.
Tigger, right? He needs it. And the whole thing about going to the shop with the guy, I was sympathising with both of them in equal measure. Like, just take the thing. Now it's got to be. Just, this is kind of like it. But it's fucking not. All of that.
That is a bear.
The whole time, I was finding it difficult to sympathize with the dog owner at that point because I've just again here I am gonna just hammer away at the film. I've never been a fan of Parker Posey. I've never been able to get behind, I think, any performance that I've seen her give.
Okay.
I am an expert at killing podcasts.
No,
I was just trying to figure what else she's been in.
She was in Boston Legal. Most recently, I've seen her in Parks and Recreation. That's
love
TV.
Her in
she was
Legal.
The lead bad person in Josie and the Pussycats, which I still insist is a great film if you've never seen. And she was in various other things as well.
She was in A Mighty Wind. She was in Waiting for Guffman. She was a villain in Blade Trinity.
Do you know what?
A lot of people
hang on,
were in Blade Trinity. Let's not hold that against anyone.
I honestly didn't think Blade Trinity was the travesty it could have been. It could have been horrible. Let's be fair. It could have been upsetting, and it wasn't that bad. Blade 2 was worse. It had the guy from Bros in it.
I like Parker Posey, and I give her points for just acting with those braces because, you know, there were a couple of moments where she just used the braces in the widest possible grimace that was just a perfect sort of screenshot of just
real braces that she had fitted for the film.
Yeah, getting braces for the film, that's dedication.
Yeah and you know, she proper meant using them as part of that woman's face and her personality. She had a metal grill. She was aggressive.
Or unless she'd always wanted braces and then the opportunity came up and it could be part of the film budget.
I don't know. Teeth look pretty damn straight. So that's the couple, the neurotic Weimaraner owners. Then we've got the couple with the little Norwich Terrier. And they're on the lower end of the economic scale. He's a clothing salesman with two left feet. And she's just
literally two left feet.
She's been around every block.
Every time you just meet someone, it's like
I think it was the two left feet on Eugene Levy that was nearly the high point for me of the film. It's the type of humor that wasn't in this film as much as it is in the other Christopher Guest films. The sort of thing that makes no sense. It's not based in reality whatsoever, but they just toss it out like it happens every day.
Yeah, because it's going to give you two lines.
When they panned down and they showed his two left feet for the first time, okay, that time I did laugh.
Good. Yay. The hit count for Scott was one. I personally think that the hit count for me with this film is really very high. I'm laughing a lot and I'm laughing out loud. It's not just a little chortle. It's a, oh my God, here's another killer line. The whole counting out of nuts. I mean, for goodness sake. just buries me. It just buries me.
I think the personal highlight for me was this shoeless Joe Jackson joke.
That was
because it was so left field.
For me, the highlight wasn't even a verbal joke. For me, the funniest joke in this film is the hotel they go to is this small provincial hotel that has your traditional lineup of clocks behind the concierge desk.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all set to the same time. Because it's New York, Philadelphia, Boston.
The world's really, really small at the Taft Hotel.
And that hotel, I actually had a joke in the film that I didn't catch until I went back and read the trivia on IMDb. The hotel manager, as he's describing all the cleaning products.
Yeah, he references.
He makes a reference to a musical group, a rock band that was there, and they tore up the room and they roasted a goat, and he is talking about Spinal Tap.
Yeah, getting the smell of burnt goat out of the room.
I love it when one film talks about another film. You so rarely get that. You get it on TV enough, but films, it's still special when they do it.
One of my favourite moments as well comes from the next couple, but they're kind of not a couple at all. There's only one scene of her with her husband, and it's the incredibly wealthy woman who's married to a man who's almost dead.
You mean Anna Nicole Smith? Oh, no, wait a minute.
Kind of, but like...
Yeah, I'm not sure how intense she was when she got married.
Yeah. But there's this wonderful interview to camera talking about what they've got in common. They say, oh, we've got lots of things in common. We both like soup. It's my favourite line from her. It's just perfect. They've got absolutely nothing to talk about, and sometimes they talk, and they can talk or not talk forever.
But he never says a word at any point throughout the entire movie.
He never says anything. But we don't see her again because she's got another relationship.
He's the old guy that dies in Old School with Will Ferrell.
Oh, he is, yeah.
I think he actually died. Oh, hang on. This was because he was really very old.
Well, of course he was. He looked like if they actually gave him dialogue in this film, he would crumble to dust.
Exactly, yeah, he looked like he probably couldn't manage that.
Come back to
he
that.
He died the year after this was made.
Did
there you
he?
Go.
Yeah.
I was very sad now.
Yeah.
Down.
Well, it was.
Let's talk more about how dogs are suffering by being in dog shows.
Let's not. Eh?
I just love the relationship she
has.
Don't
buy
the
a pug. Sorry.
The trainer with that. With
Jane
the,
Lynch.
Yeah, Jane
Lynch is incredible in this film.
Are you just like they are out there? They are.
Yeah.
They are, but it's never really. And then oh yeah.
It's the moment. It's a moment where she says she wants to make her over. You just know, I want to fucking see that. It's going to be hideous. I want to see that. Richard was already laughing at that. That's going to be so awful.
He's just thinking of that immediately.
But we never get to see that moment because it was clearly so awful, no fucker was going to see it.
See, yeah, at one point I did nearly turn to you and ask, are they both aware that they're a lesbian couple?
Yeah. Well, yeah, they were.
And I'm not sure that they are both aware of it. They clearly are one, but I don't think they know.
It's something I was curious about as I was watching the film, and since we're talking about this particular couple. After they win Best in Group, and they have that... big on-camera kiss after that.
Yeah.
Was that supposed to be a reveal to the audience? Because if it was, I was not fooled from the start. So I didn't know if it was if the audience was supposed to say, "Oh, they actually are a couple." I thought maybe sort of, but wow. If it was supposed to be a surprise, I didn't think it worked.
I don't think it was a surprise.
I think it was just a confirmation of what everybody thought all the way through. Anyway.
And a very public, yeah. And a way for the other gay couple in this film, the two guys with the matching shih tzus with the full on pompadour hairdos, and their Indian wall hangings and kimonos and overpacking for 2 days.
They were great. That is
such a great
what
couple.
Was his name? Hang on, I'm trying to find it.
But
now.
You know, it was a perfect excuse for them to go. Oh, you know.
The actors were Michael McKean and John Michael Higgins as Stefan and Scott.
It's John Michael Scott, Higgins in particular that I've seen in a lot of stuff. If you've seen TV or movies for the last 15 years, you've seen him in all kinds of things.
But, you know, one film that he was in, Blade Trinity.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, it all comes back.
Did it occur to anyone else the number of lines you could draw between actors in this film and what films they've all been in together?
They're in a really, really tight Venn diagram, these guys.
Because it's
really tight.
But it's way beyond just the Christopher Guest films.
I know.
How many of them have appeared in one of the American Pie movies?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, and beyond that, and it just goes on and on, and all sort of like the Anchorman movies and other Will Ferrell projects and other sort of Saturday Night Live link projects and that sort of thing. It just goes on and on. It's like these guys only see each other when they work.
Yeah.
And they've never worked with anyone else. Have I gone a bit quiet?
No.
Nope.
Am I fine?
Nope.
Yeah, you're fine.
I'm very quiet in my own head. Okay. Never mind. So, what else do we have?
Right, can I just say, because while we're talking, sometimes Google listens to me. And it's listened to me recently. It thinks
anyone else a little worried?
It thinks, thinks I said, really very high on life in the world, little holes in my garden, Caroline. The whole town is not amused. Goodness sake, just been made.
Good work there, Google.
Yeah, great listening.
Well, I unless anybody else has anything to add.
Well, the problem is, it is a mockumentary comedy. There's nothing really to add other than quoting lines and scenes, and that just gets a bit boring for the listener.
I guess there's just the one guy left to talk about is Harlan and Hubert. And Harlan's Christopher Guest. And I really do believe that Eugene Levy and Christopher Guest got to write their own lines because they both had so much fun. I love this character because he talks so incredibly fast and with such a deep accent that it's his first interview to camera is kind of nervous and he speaks particularly quickly in that first scene. And it's kind of exhausting to keep up with him, but he's already just oozing with love for his dog in the first time he talks about the dog. And then we meet him and how they interact with each other is just so beautiful. It's every relationship he could possibly want. That dog is his best mate, is his brother, is his wife, it's his confidant, it's his priest. The dog is everything. And that scene where he talks about how he drove his mother mad by naming nuts. It's wonderful. And then he sings a little song with little whoops and whistles in his face. And I don't know how he did that. I think if I was required to do that, I would have been fucking pissing myself for at least 3 hours before my face would stop and just be in the right position to do that. That whole scene with him in the van, with the dog in the back seat listening to him, was just so beautiful. I love those guys.
You
that's
have to
who I am.
Talk to your dog in the car as you're driving along. Otherwise, what's the point in having the dog in the car?
That's right.
He sits and listens intently. It's great.
Yeah.
The character of Harlan Pepper brought the best example of how we can be sure that there was additional footage that they did film, additional storylines and elements that did not make it into the final cut. Because as he's loading Hubert into his RV, and he's getting the send-off from Will Sasso in a great but very small role, he gets that mixtape from him, and they're bringing a box out to the RV. And one of the guys from the bait shop asks him, what do you got in here, Harlan? He says, oh, that's just a little something I picked up. And it's never referred to again. You're not going to draw attention to that box unless you're going to show us what's in it.
And you don't get to
unless you leave that scene on the cutting room floor. There had to be something in the box. I was waiting for that box to come back the entire movie.
I was waiting for the mixtape. We didn't get the mixtape. We just got him singing. So, yeah, you're right. There's stuff missing.
Also, while you mentioned Will Sasso, he does a number of Vine video clips, if you're familiar with Vine, where he shoots them from behind the steering wheel of his car, and he's being Arnold Schwarzenegger driving around. And it's possibly the funniest thing you've ever seen in your life. It's hilarious. His Arnie impersonation is spot on. And it's brilliant. I encourage everybody to look him up on Vine. That's the only time I'll ever say that. And maybe the only time anyone has ever said that, but it's true this time. Right then, have we really got to the end now? Because it feels like we have.
I feel like it has, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I was just going to mention about Harlan being so anthropomorphizing of his dog that he has a ventriloquist dummy as well, so he can bring life to inanimate objects, and he does that with his dog. That's all I was going to add to that. I love him.
Now I'm considering learning ventriloquism.
And he didn't say Brazil nut, and I'm like, going Brazil nut, yeah? At the telly, it's terrible.
And I'd just like to add that Ed Begley Jr. is in this and rather good.
Yeah, looking very tall.
He plays a really nice character because I found the most distressing part of the film was when they turn up at the hotel and their credit card doesn't work. And he finds them somewhere to stay. And that is actually just a really nice moment of the film.
It's proper Jesus and Mary story, though, isn't it? There's no room at the end. There's no credit card that works. You will sleep in the cleaner's closet.
Of course, that never occurred to me. That's so very clever.
You see?
That is very clever.
It's a nativity, and it's kind of a premonition. Shall we say?
Oh, now this actually is the best film ever. Now,
did you say? You didn't know it was that deep, did you?
I didn't. But look how deep! My God.
It's not deep at all, people. It's just funny, and it's a really, really pleasant film.
How can it?
That you can get multiple watches out of, and it will only get better the more you watch it, and spend time with the characters and just see little nuances in their interactions that you maybe missed the first time around.
I don't know how it could be a nativity metaphor and not be considered really deep. That was an insanely deep movie.
See? You come up with movies you should see, that's what you get.
Exactly.
Levels, baby.
Levels. Let's give some scores to Best in Show. Hang on. Typing Best in Show into Evernote. Okay, Alison.
Solid 4.
Hang on, I'm just typing Alison.
A.
4. Okay. I'm coming to Scott last. Simon?
I love the film and I will watch it again, but Scott is right in that the genre has been done better, so it's a 4 for me as well.
It's still a very high score.
It's a very good film.
It is. It is indeed. Jonathan?
See, I was going to give it a 3, and then the guy turned up, the commentator turned up, and he was amazing, and I wanted to give it a 5, so I suppose that averages out at a 4.
Cool.
That makes sense. And finally, Scott.
Well, I was coming into this episode planning to give the film a 2, but two factors caused me to change it. One, I have to recognize that I gave Night of the Living Dead, the last time I was on Movies You Should See, too low a score. I should have given that a 5 instead of a 4.
You denied it a perfect score.
Yes, yes, that was me. For all time, I must live with that burden. But also, another good probably the better reason for changing my score is, upon reflection, I have to realize that even though this film of the Christopher Guest style movies didn't speak to me as much as the others, I have to recognize that it is so well loved by most people for a reason. And I can't let my cat person-ness get in the way too much. Maybe I didn't enjoy it as much as some people did, but it's still a very well put together comedy. It's very well performed by all of the seasoned improv actors. They're always fun to watch. And just because I didn't really get the dog thing, I can't punish the film for that. So I do give this a 3.
Oh, good stuff.
Okay. 15.
Nay, bad.
That makes this a movie you should see, which is... What is the cutoff?
12.
Is it 12?
Mm.
Okay.
See, 12's average, though, isn't it? If everyone gives it a 3, you end up with 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems about right.
But that seems about right in life as well.
Yeah, it does.
3 and above.
Unless we have a film roll through here that scores a 4, then it reaches the so bad you just have to see.
Exactly, yeah.
I agree.
If
there
we
should
only
be
give
a bottom
it
threshold.
Zeros and ones. Because you make us give 1, don't you? We can't give a 0.
Well, apart from the one guy who insisted on giving that one thing 0 that time.
Which guy was that?
It was when Ian gave Heather 0.
There's a reason. Is the reason why he's never been on the show again.
It's right. It's right. He's ostracized. Because he's just wrong.
He's not being ostracized. I used the remote detonation.
Oh, did you? Is that what happened? Yeah.
Ian exploded weeks ago.
I haven't spoken to him since the last two asked to tell. I've wondered where he was.
Yeah. I've got an app for it.
Yeah, I wonder if you swapped our devices, because I did have a huge explosion in my kitchen several weeks ago.
Oh, did you move the microwave? That was where it was in your house.
See, my ploy worked. Now I know where it is.
Oh, no, I'm going to put it in the next microwave. Not now. Just be careful when you put your shoes on. And that's what I'm saying.
Well, that's rich, never going to America again.
I'll be on my own then. Okay.
Not letting you in again.
Oh, they just detain me for a while. They don't deny me. They just detain me.
Oh, I'm only joking, America.
They just ruined my day a bit.
Not really put a bomb in Scott's shoes. I've not been to America for ages, so if that helps.
For ages?
Yes. That's what all the terrorists say.
Like, what? Yeah, it wasn't me.
Surely it was just last year, Mr. So-called Smith.
Not been in America for ages. I've been in Pakistan.
That's right. I've been at college.
Yeah. Training camp.
College.
No. fuck it. Anyway,
15. It's good, that.
Thank you.
Watch it. It might become your sick day movie, because it's one of mine.
I'm going to keep it on my iPad and phone at all times, I think, because it's going to be one of those.
It is.
Definitely. Good. I'm glad everybody kind of enjoyed it and got on with it, at least. And just remember, when your cat looks at you, it's really thinking, I'm just waiting for the right time to kill you, you know.
And then eat you.
And they're British. They all have British accents.
All cats.
All cats.
Okay.
So, without further ado, thank you for listening, everybody. We'll be back another time with another episode of Movies You Should See. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.